Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas. TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, cadet.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect a kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
I love my chocolate. My favourite is cream eggs. So if I was a cream egg, how would you eat me?
And who's that for?
That's for number two.
Hi, Gary.
How are you?
That's an easy question. If you were a cream egg, I'd gobble you up and swallow you whole.
I'm sorry now if you're after spitting out your cup of tea at home. Good answer there, Gary. Who do you want to ask next?
I'll go with number one.
Hi, Gary.
How are you?
Grant. If you're a cream egg, well, first I'd lick you slowly. Then I'd bite into you nice and gently. And then I'd lick out the insides and get a nice scrumptious taste.
That's great.
If you were a cream egg, I'd beat your brains in. That was Blind Date, which relaunched last Sunday on at 9 p.m. on TV3. You can catch it, of course, on the TV3 player. James Dempsey has been treating himself to the television spectacle. So, taking a decade or a format that they shot, 10 years ago out of the shed. Yeah. How's that going?
So, right. I went in with this with pretty low expectations, and I'd say it exceeded even my lowest of expectations. I thought that this was completely and utterly misjudged for a Sunday night 9 o'clock time slot.
Mm.
I think, right, I cannot speak for all Irish people, I can only speak for myself, but I would hope that I would have at least a kind of an awareness of the tastes of the people who listen to your show.
Mm.
And I think I would imagine that listener is not the kind of person, is the kind of person who, if they're at a wedding and somebody starts making a speech that veers into that kind of really awkward body, you know, double entendre, but the kind of double that is like a single pounding against your head, that everyone just feels a bit awkward about it. And for me, it was like this, except stretched out for an hour. It was less Blind Date, more like gouge my eyes out while watching this date. I found it just so strange as a show. I found it really old fashioned. And I mean that in the sense that, okay, it is a format originally from the 1980s.
Yeah.
But a format that played out as a kind of family entertainment, like, you know, light entertainment show.
And was nothing as suggestive as that.
No, it was like a little bit tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
But like, I thought it was old fashioned also in its approach towards the show. I kind of felt everything about it was less kind of, it was very laugh at the contestants rather than laugh with them. I felt it was sort of an awkward cringiness to it. As an hour of television went, I found it uncomfortable viewing. I found it really unpleasant, and just, I had very little positive to say about it, except maybe the set looked quite nice. But I honestly didn't warm to it at all. And if I had been sitting in one of the seats waiting to be picked, I would have been hoping that they would immediately get rid of me as soon as possible. Because I do think Blind Date can work as a format. You know, I think any dating show can work as a format. Mm. We have currently, right now, I would say, the ones that are at the peak are like First Dates, which takes a very simple premise.
Yeah.
Two people who've never met each other, put a meal between them and get them talking. I think it is excellent. I think I could watch hours of it all day long. The Irish one, a fine if flawed iteration, mostly because the people who are on it generally are cut from the same cloth, all very young. It's a lot of sameness over and over again. This is, you know, trading on Blind Date as was, but trying to be this very kind of risque thing. I think it should be on a Friday night against the Late Late, or it should be on a Saturday night at about 10 o'clock in the evening. It should not be on Sunday night at 9 o'clock, which is a time, you know, typically associated for the fear of going back to work the
yes.
next day, and nice, polite costume dramas on BBC One, particularly as we head into the winter months.
Yeah, you want a Downton or a Bake Off.
Yes, then. Exactly. Yeah. You want something nice, calm and reassuring to sort of bring you back into the fold of the week. And this, I just thought, was horrible. It made my skin crawl. I didn't like it at all.
Well, did it deserve then to be on television at all? Don't mind in the wrong time slot. Given that it's a format that you know, is we might look back at the original Blind Date and say it's kind of innocent for those days.
I'd say
but
it
wasn't
has,
nasty. Though.
Yeah, I'd say it has almost now a camp quality now, the original Blind Date. Yeah. If you were to watch reruns of it, it would be seen as kind of very innocent and simple and cute. And I bet even their like 90s dates are even hilariously naff as well, doing like rollerblading. Roller
you know
skating.
Who was on Blind Date?
I actually know who you're going to say now.
Dermot Bannon.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, curious.
You can find that clip
TV.
On YouTube, actually.
Yeah.
But whether or not it should be made, I mean, it came out swinging at the very beginning with this sort of, monologue by Al Porter that came out for, came out against First Dates. He sort of made this joke at the expense of First Dates, which while a Channel 4 program and, you know, TV3 has Gogglebox, RTE2 has First Dates. So it came out swinging as a sort of a point of contest against it. I mean, they are both dating shows, but it's not like this is, you know, two rival news shows. They can both exist within the same market.
Yes.
They're not even going up against each other, you know, head to head in an actual ratings war. So to me, they have obviously invested money in this format. And I think people will watch it no matter what, because people like to watch Irish things. It got, I think, more than 200,000 viewers, which is very solid work on a Sunday night. It had a novelty factor in the first episode. For me, it was more painful than any kind of pleasure. So I got everything I needed out of it in the first episode.
Could it be one of those kind of Mrs. Brown's Boys things that,
maybe.
Us, you know, Dublin metrosexuals just don't get it? But there are people who genuinely love it.
Look, I'm sure there are people texting in who are vociferously disagreeing with me.
Well, on Twitter there was a lot of. Oh my God, I want to gouge my eyes out, but I can't stop watching.
Yeah,
so was there a car crash?
I mean, I felt I had to keep watching in order to see the episode through, in order to competently talk about it here. But I have to admit, when I looked up the TV guide on Sunday night and saw that it was on for an hour, my heart sank a little bit because I was kind of thinking, well, where are we going to get an hour out of this nonsense? And the truth was they had obviously had a dress rehearsal some other night, and they had brought in two couples, you know, that had gone on a holiday abroad and showed, I suppose, how that format will work as well, because it wasn't just the, you know, questions and body answers. It was also, here's the date they went on. And we will see next week they are going to, Bunratty House and or Barcelona. So, you know, again...
Guess which one it's going to be.
Well, no, it's both, sorry.
All right, okay, both. That's not bad.
So I shouldn't say and or, it is both. One couple are going to Bunratty. The woman of which came out in quite an elaborate ball gown. And then, and then the other couple are going to Barcelona. Obviously, these are holiday deals they strike with somebody. To me, it just was lacking in warmth and
charm. They're sending them on a date to Barcelona.
Yeah.
And what are they going to do? Take part in a riot? Be beaten senseless by the police?
Listen, revolutions cause love all the time.
Maybe they do. Now, another thing that strikes me about Blind Date and its original iteration is that it was very scripted, but for some reason in those days... We didn't expect, these were ordinary people, so that was okay.
Yeah.
Nowadays, perhaps we might be less forgiving. That sounded very scripted, and that terrible delivery from people who don't do it for a job.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is, I think nowadays as well, there's an onus on the producers of the show to cast contestants who are deliberately, you know, playing up to the to the being on television-ness of the whole production. I mean, in this, we got a guy who was a member of a Prodigy tribute band.
You play that.
Who twice broke out into his Prodigy song, neither of which I thought were much of a tribute to the band. So there is going to be, I feel, a lot more stunt casting on this than, say, there is on First Dates.
Mm.
And as I said before, I think the casting on First Dates is its biggest downfall because it's a lot of the same young people over and over again.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're going to see much difference throughout. What will be interesting, I suppose, the only kind of potentially saving grace of, you know, grasping at modernity that the show could have is that potentially it would have, you know, a mixture of couples being formed, as in not just straight couples, bisexual couples, gay couples. You could have a mix in that. That is the only, you know, modern twist I could see them bringing to it. But, you know, but based on the first episode, I'm not seeing much of that.
Did the format vary at all from the original?
Not, well, I mean, except for being a little bit more, you know, a lot more tongue-in-cheek, it definitely was the same format. We had Al doing a bit of a monologue, throwing in a Laura laughs here and there. Then we had Tara as our
Tara
Graham,
Flynn, yeah.
Tara Flynn as our Graham with a quick reminder, who I actually feel the worst for, because our Graham, of course, always had to spin their lines into gold. And I mean, their lines, as we've heard, are... Lead.
Right, some TV news. Amazon backing away from TV projects connected to Harvey Weinstein. Why ever would they be doing that?
Perhaps Dave? Unsurprisingly. So I'm sure by now many people have heard that the New York Times published this story of allegations of decades of sexual harassment carried out by him, to the surprise, I would say, of absolutely nobody, which is really, you know, speaks volumes about the whole industry.
Yeah.
But Amazon had been lined up to co-finance two productions with the Weinstein Company, one of which was a $160 million David O. Russell program with Robert De Niro in the lead role. And the other one was The Romanovs, which I assume is about the Russian royals, which is created by Matt Weiner of Mad Men fame. So Amazon has pretty much quietly shelved both products, saying they do not want to be involved at all, that they don't want any reputational damage. I mean, Amazon are throwing some big stones around glass houses because they do not have much reputation either. But I suppose it does go to show, you know, the lasting effects that these kinds of actions or allegations can have.
It's interesting, actually, because, I mean, the Weinstein Company weren't slow about getting rid of them.
No, very quick.
But maybe it will still have some sort of damage to the actual business there. Right, Rick and Morty fans, there was nearly a riot.
Yeah, so, right, people, I'm a big fan of Rick and Morty. I always recommend people watch it on Netflix. And in the third season, a sort of a running joke in the show was that Rick, the mad scientist, his entire passion in life is trying to once again get back to McDonald's in about 1998, when the Disney movie Mulan came out and McDonald's released Szechuan black bean sauce as a movie tie-in. And McDonald's has bought into this, you know, current craze for Rick and Morty, which has really seen its popularity explode in the last year, and released a special edition Szechuan sauce in a number of their restaurants, which were immediately mobbed by thousands of people who were demanding, give me the sauce, give me the sauce. Some people causing like near riots, jumping over counters. It led to loads of bad publicity, which of course is grist to the mill for good publicity online. And now McDonald's have apologized and said they will be releasing the sauce nationally across the US for, you know, with mass production for everybody.
Fascinating. Right, we're going to take a commercial break. Mindhunter coming up after this.
What are you doing?
Just in case.
Holden, they're not going to let you in with a sidearm.
The guy is 6'9", weighs 300 pounds.
That's right.
So what's he going to do?
He's going to take the f***ing thing away from you. He's going to kill you with it. And then he's going to have sex with your face.
Right. Okay, I wasn't expecting the clip to end that way. That's Mindhunter. All 10 episodes of season 1 are streaming on Netflix from tomorrow. So is this CSI with swearing or CSI with swearing and jokes?
You know what? Actually, that's not terrible. So that's not an unapt, or whatever the opposite of apt description is. So it is... I'll say it is directed by David Fincher, the first two episodes, who acts as the producer, and it's based on a novel called Mindhunter, inside the FBI's, or an autobiography, I should say, inside the FBI's elite serial crime unit by a man named John E. Douglas, who this book went on to become the inspiration for Red Dragon and Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, right.
So it is set in 1977, and although that book is an autobiography, for some reason, the lead character, who is based entirely on this John E. Douglas, is actually Holden Ford, who's played by Jonathan Groff, who people would know from Glee and Looking, the kind of the HBO comedy drama show. And it is about the late 70s and the FBI beginning to come to terms with sort of the emergence of an understanding of what they were then referring to as sequence killers, but which we would now refer to as serial killers. So, you know, suddenly there was this explosion of very violent and sort of bloodlustful killers all across the US with no sort of quantifiable motive. And this guy, this, you know, psychologist, essentially a special agent at the FBI, began to sort of interview them in prison to kind of get a concept of their movements or their impetus or anything like that that would sort of propel them to commit these really awful crimes, for which police were really struggling to kind of fit together any kind of logical reason. So it's about that. It is obviously 10 hours long. They only made two episodes available to TV to the critics. So I've seen the first 2 hours. And I will say, if you're a fan of David Lynch's very ascetic and kind of cold, clinical style, then you'll love it. If you're not a fan of his cold, clinical style, you might find it a little bit tiresome, because I will say in these first 2 hours, really propelling the plot along is about 10 minutes worth of the action. Now, that I am not one who has a lot of patience for that kind of slow, tiresome build-up. I really am not. I blame my mother, who has no patience for any of this, and she's passed that on to me. But I will say, I actually quite enjoyed the first 2 hours in the sense of it being very cinematic television and sort of pitched at the right time of year. Unlike Blind Date, you know, we're coming into winter, it's cold, it's dark, it's miserable. You actually kind of want a very stylish, moody, atmospheric drama that is peppered with moments of great levity and humour in a very black and dark and clinical kind of way.
Yeah.
I also thought the series really builds on kind of this current wave of true crime that everyone is obsessed with. You know, I've been listening a lot to this podcast that's very successful called My Favorite Murder, which is these two female comedians talking about people getting murdered in the US all the time. And it has taken off a lot. And I mean, they essentially spend the whole time talking about, oh, this guy, he killed her, he stabbed her a million times, and jokey about it. And it's probably better than that review. Yeah,
maybe you need to be there.
So this, I mean, in this, all of these serial killers are based on real people. So in the first two episodes, you meet a man named Ed Kemper III, who I'd never heard of. He was the co-ed killer who killed various 15-year-old girls and did unmentionable things to their decapitated heads. And he is a real life 6'9" giant who's very well spoken and very sort of, he's sort of, you know, a Hannibal Lecter style, you know, serial killer who's very capable of winding you down a path terrifyingly with his cold, dead, you know, delivery of the most shocking facts. And he's played by a completely unknown actor I've never heard of before named Cameron Britton, who is excellent in this. Uniformly, I thought the acting was excellent. It's just a kind of show you have to be a bit indulgent with and set aside, I'd say, 2 hour blocks to watch episodes, because otherwise you're going to find it moving the plot very slow.
Right. But the main characters, are they all operating out at Quantico? They're teachers rather than a...
Exactly. So yeah, it starts with them being agents and then leads with them being these teachers in Quantico in Virginia, which is where the FBI training headquarters are. Mm. And then they're on the road trying to teach cops, you know, in local sheriff's offices and so on, sheriff's departments, I should say, how to deal with these emergence of these sort of crazy killers that have no grounding in the then time frame and understanding of crime and criminality. So while they're on the road, they sort of are driving past a prison essentially and think, oh, why don't we just go in and talk to this guy? And that's sort of the spin-off point from there.
Right. Okay. And when you say the clinical David Lynch style...
David Fincher, yeah.
David Fincher style, right. It's not one of the things where somebody says something and then there's like a 2-minute gap before somebody replies.
Well, there's that 8-minute long, you know, explosion of an A-bomb that I found a bit confusing.
Right. Our third and final show today is Living with Lucy's. It's on Tuesdays at 10 p.m. on TV3 Catch Up on the TV3 player. Here's a clip.
Do you know that you were painting your face with the last 15 minutes? If we were going into combat, like, or something with the Zulus long ago, you wouldn't be painting as much.
A day.
Do you have to wash all that off now before we go to sleep tonight?
Yeah.
And is that not...
Well, I was going to ask you if I could borrow a shovel
to get it off. No, we live to get a power washer and power washer.
Yeah, hose me down in the front. Shall I have my dressing gown on? All I need now.
There you go. That's a clip from Living with Lucy. Obviously, the subject in that one is Michael Healy Ray.
Yeah.
You can't really lose with Michael Healy Ray as a subject.
Yeah, I thought it was... I don't know how I felt about the show, to be honest with you, because while watching it, what I was really struck by is the title of this is Living with Lucy. And in many ways, I think Lucy Kennedy does this kind of format, which is obviously, you know, kind of a rip-off of the Louis Theroux Weird Weekend style way back of the 90s. And she does that kind of format a disservice by making it a lot about her. You know, a lot of it is her observing things that we can already see on the screen taking place and sort of commenting on, oh, look, doesn't he answer his phone a lot? And yes, I mean, we're seeing him answer his phone a lot. I don't think it's good economic television. What it is, and I don't want to just completely come down on it, what it is or does do is at least cast quite interesting people. I mean, this series of it alone has had Katie Hopkins.
For which he got dogs abuse, apparently, definitely. As you would expect
and
online.
Yes, unsurprisingly.
Yeah, unsurprisingly. Yeah.
Davy Fitzgerald, the GAA manager. Michael Healy-Ray. I think next week is Daniela Westbrook, who is probably the most dud one of the lot because, you know, her fame has sort of dipped the most, yeah, we'll say. Or her currency, really, in pop culture. What is interesting about this is, you know, watching this, I guess, because I'm a member of the Dublin, you know, media elite. Mm. Obviously, I want her to nail Michael Healy-Ray because, you know, I'm saying this in inverted commas because, you know, he is this very divisive politician who trades in his popularity down in Kerry and is obviously extremely successful at that because he tops the poll in his constituency, as is his right and his want. So when you're watching this as a member of the Dublin media elite, you kind of want him, you want Lucy to nail him at points. And to me, she throws him these very softball questions and doesn't really follow up on them in any kind of substantive way. Like, she asks him about how he voted in the same-sex marriage referendum, and he said, well, I voted no, and, you know, that was my, you know, that was my right, and so on and so forth, but I felt it was my right to tell people how I was voting because I represent the people. But actually, both of the Kerry constituencies voted yes, so actually he wasn't, you know, necessarily representing his people. And she didn't really follow up with any kind of, well, have you changed your mind in the years since? How do you feel about it now? It was just a real, like, oh, so you did that. Okay, let's move on. Let's make a few jokes about myself. So I would like her to be a bit more ruthless. And I think she can be ruthless sometimes. And ruthless in a good way, you know, ruthless in the way this kind of program is meant to be. But regrettably for me, I thought it was pretty softball.
James, thanks a million for coming into this. We're going to take a break. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.